The medics identifying remains from Syria's mass graves, date modified colon 2025-05-07T23:13:03.506Z, description colon more than 100,000 men, women, and children were reportedly forcibly disappeared by Bashar al-Assad's regime, This will be the work of years, the medics identifying remains from Syria's mass graves, one day ago, save, Tim Franks BBC NewsHour reporting from Damascus, save, BBC, hundreds of thousands of Syrians were killed during 13 years of civil war, these, says Dr. Anas al-Hawrani, are from a mixed mass grave. The head of the newly opened Syrian Identification Center is standing next to two tables, covered in femurs. There are 32 of the human thigh bones on each laminated white tablecloth. They have been neatly aligned and numbered. Sorting is the first task for this new link in the long chain from crime to justice in Syria. A mixed mass grave means that corpses were thrown one on top of another. The chances are, these bones belong to some of the hundreds of thousands believed to have been killed by the regimes of the ousted President Bashar al-Assad and his father, Hafez, who together ruled Syria for more than five decades. If so, says Drive al-Hawrani, they were among the more recent victims, they died no more than a year ago. Drive al-Hawrani is a forensic odontologist, teeth can tell you so much more about a body, he says, at least when it comes to identifying who the person was. But with a femur, the lab workers in the basement of this squat gray office building in Damascus can begin the task, they can learn the height, the sex, the age, what sort of job they had, they might also be able to see whether the victim was tortured. The gold standard in identification is of course DNA analysis. But, he says, there is just one DNA testing center in Syria. Many were destroyed during the country's civil war. And because of sanctions, a lot of the precursor chemicals that we need for the tests are currently not available. They've also been informed that parts of the instruments could be used for aviation and so for military purposes. In other words, they could be deemed dual use, and so proscribed by many Western countries from export to Syria. Add to that, the cost, $250, £187, for a single test. And, says Drive al-Hawrani, in a mixed mass grave, you have to do about 20 tests to gather all the parts of one body. The lab relies entirely on funding from the International Committee of the Red Cross. The new government of Islamist rebels turned rulers says that what they call transitional justice is one of their priorities. Many Syrians who have lost relatives, and lost all trace of them, have told the BBC that they remain unimpressed and frustrated. They want to see more effort from the people who finally chased Bashar al-Assad from power last December after 13 years of war. During those long years of conflict, hundreds of thousands were killed, and millions displaced. And, by one estimate, more than 130,000 people were forcibly disappeared. At the current rate, it can take months to identify just one victim from a mixed mass grave. This, says Drive al-Hawrani, will be the work of many, many years. Syria mass graves, daunting task of searching for and naming the dead, Syria leader signs temporary constitution for five-year transition, Bashar al-Assad, sudden downfall ends decades of family's iron rule, mangled and tortured bodies. 11 of those mixed mass graves are slung around a beautiful, barren hilltop outside Damascus. The BBC are the first international media to see this site. The graves are quite visible now. In the years since they were dug, their surface has sunk into the dry, stony earth. Accompanying us is Hussein Ali al-Manfi, or Abu Ali, as he also calls himself. He was a driver in the Syrian military. My cargo, says Abu Ali, was human bodies. Abu Ali thinks he transported lorry loads of civilian corpses under the Assad regime. This compact man with a salt and pepper beard was tracked down thanks to the tireless investigative work of Muaz Mustafa, the Syrian-American executive director of the Syrian Emergency Task Force, a US-based advocacy group. He had persuaded Abu Ali to join us, to bear witness to what Muaz calls the worst crimes of the 21st century. Abu Ali transported lorry loads of corpses to multiple sites for more than 10 years. At this location, he came, on average, twice a week for roughly 2 years at the start of the demonstrations and then the war, between 2011 and 2013. The routine was always the same. He'd head to a military or security installation. I had a 16M, 52 feet, trailer. It wasn't always filled to the brim. But I'd have, I guess, an average of 150 to 200 bodies in each load. Of his cargo, he says he is convinced they were civilians. Their bodies were mangled and tortured. The only identification he could see were numbers written on the cadaver or stuck to the chest or forehead. The numbers identified where they had died. There were a lot, he said, from 215, a notorious military intelligence detention center in Damascus known as Branch 215. It is a place we will revisit in this story. Abu Ali's trailer did not have a hydraulic lift to tip and dump his load. When he backed up to a trench, soldiers would pull the bodies into the hole one after another. Then a front loader tractor would flatten them out, compress them in, fill in the grave. Three men with weathered faces from a neighboring village have arrived. They corroborate the story of the regular visits by military lorries to this remote spot. And as for the man behind the wheel, how could he do this for week after week, year after year? What was he telling himself each time he climbed into his cab? Abu Ali says he learned to be a mute servant of the state. You can't say anything good or bad. As the soldiers dumped the corpses into the freshly excavated pits, I would just walk away and look at the stars. Or look down towards Damascus. They broke his arms and beat his back. Damascus is where Malik Ayyub has recently returned, after years as a refugee in Turkey. Syria may have been freed of the chokehold of the Assad's dynastic dictatorship. Malik is still serving a life sentence. For the past 13 years, she has been locked into a daily routine of pain and longing. It was 2012, a year after some of the people of Syria had dared to raise a protest against their president, that her two boys were disappeared. Malik Ayyub's two sons were disappeared under Assad's rule. Mohammed was still a teenager when he was conscripted into Assad's army. As the demonstrations spread and the regime's deadly crackdown sparked a full-blown war. He hated what he was seeing, his mother says. Mohammed started absconding, and even went on the demos himself. But he was tracked down. They broke his arms and beat his back, says his mother. He spent 3 days unconscious in hospital. Mohammed went AWOL again. I reported him missing, says Malik. But I was hiding him. In May 2012, 19-year-old S. Mohammed Luck ran out. He was caught along with a group of friends. They were shot. Malik says there was no formal notification. But she has always assumed he was killed. 6 months later, Mohammed's younger brother Mar was dragged from school by officers. It was Mar's second arrest. He'd gone to the protests in 2011, aged 14. That had led to his first arrest. When he was let out of detention, a month later, he was in his underwear, covered, says his mother, in cigarette burns, wounds, and lice. He was terrified. Malik thinks Mar was disappeared from school in 2012 because the authorities had found that she had been hiding his older brother. Now, for the first time in 13 years, Malik returns to that school, desperate to get any clue about what happened to Mar. The new head teacher produces a couple of battered red ledgers. Malik traces the rows of names with her finger, and then finds her son's name. December 2012, the record flatly states, Mar has been excluded from school because he has failed to turn up for lessons for 2 weeks. There is no explanation that it is the state which has disappeared him. There is something else, though. A folder with Mar's school records has been found. Its cover is adorned with a photograph of a wise Bashar al-Assad, gazing thoughtfully into the distance. Malik picks up a pen from the head teacher's desk and scribbles over the photo. 6 months ago, that gesture could have been lethal. For years, The only scraps Malik had to cling to were two men who say they saw Mar in Branch 215, that same military detention center which produced so many corpses for Abu Ali to transport. One of the witnesses told Malik that her boy had told him something about his parents that, his mother says, only he could have known. It was definitely him. He asked this man to tell me he was doing fine. Malik heaves and leaks tears, stuffs a tattered tissue into the corners of her eyes. For Malik, like so many Syrians, the fall of Assad was not just a day of joy, but of hope. I thought there was a 90% chance Mar would walk out of prison. I was waiting for him. But she has not even been able to find her son's name on the prison lists. And so the throb of pain continues to course through her. I feel lost and confused, she says. Her own younger brother, Mahmoud, had been killed by a tank firing on civilians in 2013. At least he had a funeral. Syrian security forces monitored armed civilians who killed all whites, accused man says. Deadly clashes in Syria's Druze areas raise fears of widening unrest. Syrians have more freedom after Assad, but could they soon lose it? Syrian civil war Syria.